KFNX News Talk Radio 1100 presents The Charles Goyette Show. To be a part of the program, call 602-277-KFNX. That's 602-277-5369. And now filling in for America's most independent talk show host, from Anti-War Radio at antiwar.com, here's Scott Horton.
Good morning, Phoenix, Arizona. Scott Horton here filling in on the Charles Goyette Show, KFNX, 1100 AM in Phoenix, Arizona. Glad to have you guys listening in the audience today. I'm doing the best I can to build the case against the case for war with Iran. In the first hour, we talked to Dr. Gordon Prather, nuclear physicist, about how Iran does not have nuclear bombs, and they're nowhere near having nuclear bombs, and the IAEA says so. And we talked with Juan Cole, fluent Farsi speaker, who translated Aminajad's October 25th, 2005 speech as not at all saying that Iran threatens to wipe Israel off the map, but in fact saying something quite different indeed. And our next guest is Philip Giraldi. He's a former CIA counterterrorism officer. He's a partner in Canestraro Associates. He's a contributing editor to the American Conservative magazine. And he writes every second Tuesday for us at antiwar.com. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Hi. Hi, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to talk to you this morning. Let me ask you, Phil Giraldi, former counterterrorism officer, to your knowledge, what is Iran's relationship with al-Qaeda?
Well, of course, that's it's somewhat debated, but I think that most people who are following the issue would agree that it's not a friendly relationship at all. That al-Qaeda has basically has a anti-Shiite agenda, and Iran, of course, being the great Shiite power, it is threatened by al-Qaeda. After the United States invaded Afghanistan in 2001, a number of al-Qaeda members tried to flee going through Iran. They were detained by the Iranian government and are still detained. There are believed to be six of them, and one of them is Osama bin Laden's son.
Uh-huh. And now, I read in the New York Sun, an article by Eli Lake just last week, that all these al-Qaeda guys in Iranian prison are actually running al-Qaeda terrorist networks with the advice and consent of the Iranian government.
There is actually no evidence of that. I think that this article is basically one of a number of articles we've seen lately to make a case against Iran, and the people that are doing this are basically playing free with the facts. The Iranians no doubt maintain some kind of contact, probably at certain levels, with elements in al-Qaeda. But communication and having some common agendas against the United States, for example, don't necessarily mean that that they're working together in any substantive way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's what the war party would say, is that you're being naive when you talk about the Sunni-Shia split there, that they have a common enemy, the United States, and of course they'd work together against us. They're much more alike than they are like us.
Well, that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The Iranians basically have a much different agenda in terms of how they are dealing with the United States vis-a-vis the situation in Iraq. The Iranians, in fact, have been fairly helpful in terms of pushing for greater stability in Iraq and also in Afghanistan. One has to go back a few years to recall that the Taliban, the close allies of the al-Qaeda, staged a major attack against the Iranian consulate general inside Afghanistan and killed 11 Iranian diplomats. So there's no love lost between these two parties.
Mm-hmm. And now you talk about these al-Qaeda members who were arrested, six of them, including Osama bin Laden's son, at least purportedly. Now, if I remember right, the Iranians offered to trade some al-Qaeda members that they had arrested for members of a terrorist group called the Mujahideen al-Khalq a couple of years ago, and their offer was refused by the United States. Why is that?
That's exactly correct. Back in 2003, the Iranian government, going through the Swiss embassy, offered to turn over these al-Qaeda members, including Osama bin Laden's son, to the U.S. authorities. And in return, they wanted, as a quid pro quo, the United States to do something to stop the activity of the Mujahideen al-Khalq, which is a very strange group. We could talk about it for an hour, but it's basically an Iranian resistance group that was supported by Saddam Hussein, of all people, and is now being supported by the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm. And there have also been reports of a group called Jundullah being used to kill Iranians, so working an outsourced job for the United States. Do you know anything about them?
Yeah, they're a group that's Iran, like many countries in the region, has ethnic minorities in certain areas, and one of the ethnic minority areas is called Baluchistan, which is close to Afghanistan. And there's a separatist movement there which has been supported by the United States, and the United States is also supporting separatists among the Arab minority, which is closer to the border with Iraq.
Mm-hmm. So here we are. Our government is supporting terrorist groups and ethnic division in Iran.
That's right, we are. And it's the ultimate hypocrisy that we're charging the Iranians with doing the same thing based on a lot less evidence.
Mm-hmm. And now, the first time you and I spoke, Phil, was almost exactly 2 years ago when you broke the story in the American Conservative magazine that Vice President Dick Cheney, who, by the way, has no authority at all under the Constitution other than to keep the bench warm until the president dies in his sleep somehow or to break a tie vote in the Senate. But in any case, that the vice president had ordered the United States Air Force to draw up plans for airstrikes against Iran that even included the use of nuclear weapons. Phil, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And I think there's a lot of evidence since that time to suggest that nuclear weapons are still very much on the table. I know you're aware of the fact that the leading Republican presidential candidates, Mr. McCain and Giuliani and Romney, have all basically not flinched at all in their debates at the prospect of using nuclear weapons against Iran if that should prove necessary in their judgment.
And now, best you can tell, what would necessitate the use of nuclear weapons in the event of war with Iran?
Well, there are a couple of scenarios that I've been hearing. One of them would be to use them automatically as part of the attack scenario because the intelligence sources suggest that a lot of the Iranian nuclear sites are buried way underground and would be very hard to get unless you used specialized weaponry to include nuclear weapons. Another scenario I keep hearing is that nuclear weapons would be kind of a threat if the Iranians continued to fight back after we staged our attack. We would threaten them with a nuclear attack, presumably to make them desist.
And you know, that reminds me of I talked with Wayne White at the beginning of this year about plans that he had seen for airstrikes, and he said the premise seemed to be that we're just going to bomb them for a week or so and then call it off. And basically what you're saying is that's what the nukes are for, our nukes that everybody knows we in fact do have, is to tell them, listen, you're going to sit there and take it while we bomb you for a week or two, and then you're going to not fight back. And if you do fight back, then we will use nuclear weapons on you.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I'm hearing, that basically the nuclear weapons would kind of be in the back pocket in this one scenario, where if the Iranians persisted, for example, staging attacks in the Gulf of Hormuz or destabilizing Afghanistan, or they had a bunch of scenarios that they could pursue, we would kind of pull the nuclear card out of the pack and threaten to use it. It's pretty scary. We would attack them first, even though they haven't attacked us, and then produce nuclear weapons to tell them, just roll over and don't resist.
Yeah, and all to get nuclear weapons that don't exist, and to get at their relationship with al-Qaeda, which, you know, we can all just use our Google machine, and we can tell that al-Qaeda just warned Iran, threatened war with Iran 2 weeks ago.
That's right, yeah. Al-Qaeda has constantly threatened Iran and threatened Shia Muslims in general. Many of the horrific attacks inside Iraq are carried out by al-Qaeda, but they target Shia mosques and Shia believers.
Because they're trying to keep us there. They're trying to foment the ethnic civil war in Iraq to keep America there longer so they can have their battle longer. Like Zawahiri said a month or two ago, we don't want the Americans to leave yet. We don't want them to leave until they've had 300,000 or 400,000 casualties.
That's right. That's right. So we're playing into their hands.
Well, as always, all right, everybody. Philip Giraldi, former CIA counterterrorism officer, partner, and Canestraro associate, contributing editor at the American Conservative Magazine, and writes for us every Tuesday, thank goodness, at antiwar.com. Thank you very much, Phil.
Thank you, Scott.
Really appreciate it. All right, everybody, this is the Charles Goyette Show. We're making the case against the case for war against Iran. And we'll be right back. The Charles Goyette Show, KFNX News Talk Radio in Phoenix, Arizona. And we're going to have to plow right through this interview as fast as we can, so let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Robert Dreyfus. He's one of America's great investigative reporters. He writes for The Nation, Rolling Stone, The American Prospect, Mother Jones, TomPaine.com, Neiman Watchdog. His website is RobertDreyfus.com, and his book is one of the most important books that you could possibly get your hands on concerning American Middle East policy. It's called Devil's Game, How the United States Helped Unleash Fundamentalist Islam. Robert, are you there?
I'm here. Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, sir?
I am great.
All right. Now, let's get right to it here. There are two, well, you tell me yes or no to this one. There are two major factions in Iraq. The Hakim clan, which is the power behind the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq, Sfiri, and the Sadr clan, Muqtada al-Sadr, the power behind the Mahdi army, right?
Well, among the Shiites, yes. Those
yeah,
are, those
among
are
the Shiites.
The two Shiite leaders who
right.
are really kind of facing off right now in Iraqi politics.
Okay, now which side is backed by America and which side is backed by Iran?
Well, the funny thing is that the United States and Iran are backing the same side.
Oh, no.
We're both supporting the Iraqi government and its establishment faction under the Hakim family, the Supreme Council. The Supreme Council was actually created in Iran 25 years ago. It was for most of that time a wholly owned subsidiary of the Iranian intelligence service and their Revolutionary Guard. They were Iraqi middle-class Shiite exiles who fled to Iran and built an army with Iranian help. And after the U.S. invasion, they came back and established themselves. And not only was Iran supporting them all along, but now the United States brought them into the inner councils of the Iraqi government, and they're now the most important players in that Iraqi government. So the paradox of all this is here you have the general and the ambassador, the two main players for the United States in Baghdad, pointing their fingers at Iran and saying that Iran is trying to undermine and destabilize the American presence in Iraq, when in fact the main Iranian allies are the ones in the Iraqi government. So the Sadr forces, the people you mentioned earlier, this young 30-something rebel cleric named Muqtada al-Sadr, he's the one who operates the Mahdi army. Well, he's really more of a nationalist, and he's opposed to the American presence in Iraq. So I guess it's not a surprise that we're not supporting him.
Mm-hmm.
We are supporting the pro-Iranian group, which so far at least is happy to take American help in order to build up its own army and police against their rivals, especially the Sunnis. Of course, they're also building up that army against Sadr and his Shiite forces as well.
Now, so, Robert Dreyfus, you've also written about this attempt by Muqtada Sadr, the Shiite nationalist leader, to create what he calls the Government of National Salvation. What's that?
Well, this is something that's been talked about for probably a year now in Iraq. There's an effort by various people, both Sunni and Shia, to come up with a nationalist solution to create an alliance of opposition parties in the Iraqi parliament and the government and the public at large there. And this would include almost all of the Sunni parties. It would include the secular parties, that is, the non-religious ones, like Iyad Alawi's party.
Mm-hmm.
He was a former prime minister. And it would include, and that's the plan, to bring Sadr into it. And what unites these groups is three things. They're opposed to Al-Qaeda. They're opposed to Iran, to excessive influence by Iran in Iraq. And they're also opposed to the U.S. occupation. Now, they have a lot of differences, but those three things that unite them, you know, make it, I think, very possible for them to reach some sort of stable agreement if they were left alone.
Well, now, isn't this interesting? Because, Robert Dreyfus, all the talk is about wanting a multi-ethnic coalition government, trying to end the civil war. We can't leave yet because we'll leave it in a state of civil war. And yet, we're blocking a multi-ethnic coalition government in favor of the Iran factions. And basically what you're telling me is this this multi-ethnic coalition government they're trying to put together wants to fight Al-Qaeda, wants to fight the influence of Iran, but they get a big X where they want to fight the occupation of the United States. And so we would rather, American policymakers would rather back the Iran factions rather than letting these people end the civil war, but then having to give up our own occupation of Mesopotamia. Is that about it?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the problem for the United States is anybody we support loses credibility among Iraqis because the Iraqis have become increasingly anti-American, and they blame the United States for the mess that Iraq is in. So any Iraqi politician we support tends to be the kiss of death for their popularity. So we end up propping up these unpopular parties simply because they're willing to cooperate with us.
Because they need us.
Yeah, the vast majority of Iraqis want us to leave, and they want to support politicians who want us to leave. So those are precisely, you know, that's what I call the catch-22 of Iraqi politics, is any Iraqi politician we support isn't going to have much support any longer from the people.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we keep hearing on TV that we just can't leave because the situation will get so much worse. But worse for who? Worse for the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution that was created by the Ayatollah Khomeini? What do I care if the situation gets worse for them?
Well, it's, you know, you have to be a little bit careful because with each passing day, you're having a hardening of sentiments. You're having a hardening of people's attitudes, and sectarian hatreds are growing. So it's possible that when we leave, there will be a fair amount of killing. The problem is the longer we stay, the worse that's likely to get because we're reinforcing these sectarian divisions.
Mm-hmm. And now, isn't it just a shame, too, that apparently no one who has a job talking about news on TV can understand any of this? They just can't.
Well, you know, most Americans have thrown up their hands and they've given up trying to understand Iraqi politics. And so now you have a lot of politicians, Democrats and Republicans, saying, oh, well, it's all the Iraqis' fault, and yeah, we should get out because the Iraqis can't get their act together. And I think you know, there's impatience to try to even begin to understand what makes Iraq work from the inside.
Right, absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to know how Iraq works from the inside, you could do a lot worse than to read the writings of Robert Dreyfus, American investigative reporter. You can find all that he writes at robertdreyfus.com. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, folks, this is the Charles Goyette Show on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100 AM in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Scott Horton from antiwar.com filling in. And so there you have it. America's allies in Iraq are Iran's allies in Iraq. Coming up, are Iranian bombs responsible for lost lives of American soldiers in Iraq? We'll talk with Gareth Porter from the American Prospect and IPS News. And your phone calls right after this.
Love me one time.
The Charles Goyette Show on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100 AM in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Scott Horton, filling in for Charles Goyette, America's most independent talk show host. And I'm very thankful for the opportunity to spend this time with you folks in Phoenix, Arizona this morning. I'm doing the best I can here, folks, to make the case against the case for war with Iran. In the first hour, we talked with Dr. Gordon Prather about their nuclear program and Professor Juan Cole from the University of Michigan about the correct translation of Ahmadinejad's speech, where he did not threaten to wipe Israel off the map. We talked with Phil Giraldi, former CIA officer from the American Conservative magazine, about how Iran is not friends with al-Qaeda, and no, they are not operationally working together against American interests. And Robert Dreyfus, author of Devil's Game, talked about how the Iranian factions in Iraq are the American factions in Iraq. We're both backing the same side in that godforsaken land. And now to continue thoroughly beating down the war party's excuse for a preventive war against Iran is Gareth Porter. He's a historian and journalist. He writes for IPS News and for the American Prospect. We feature all his IPS articles at antiwar.com. Gareth, good to talk to you again, sir.
Good morning, Scott. Glad to be on the show.
It's great to have you here, and you're going to fill in a very important part of our story here today, this morning. For more than a year, Gareth Porter, for more than a year and a half, actually, even, the Bush administration has been claiming that Iran is responsible for the bombs that are killing our guys in Iraq. Now, the idea that we've all known for 4 years that the enemy of the American GI in Iraq is the Sunni insurgency and not the Shiite factions, which, as we just discussed with Robert Dreyfus, are backed by Iran, seems to be besides the point. The rate and intensity of these accusations has increased incredibly over the last 6 months, and especially even in this last month, as the U.S. Senate just passed last week a sense of the Congress, 97-0, accusing Iran of killing Americans in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, Gareth Porter, tell me, is it the case, as the war party claims on TV, that the new and improved explosively formed penetrator landmines in Iraq must come from Iran?
Well, the answer to that is no, and I can go into more detail on that. But if I may, I would like to sort of cut to the headline here.
Okay.
On this broader story, which is that the 97-0 Senate resolution, which, of course, was introduced by Senator Joe Lieberman, the leading member of the war party in Congress, that is the party of war against Iran, was based on an absolutely false premise, which is that the story that had come out on July 2nd or 3rd, the story was written on the 2nd, published on the 3rd in the New York Times, that Iran was involved in directly and even directed the planning for a raid in Karbala, Iraq, on January 20th, which killed 5 Americans, is simply utterly false. Not only did the U.S. command spokesman, Brigadier General Kevin Bergner, not provide any evidence whatsoever of such an Iranian involvement in the planning of that attack. But in fact, he did not even say directly that Iran was involved in the planning of that attack. This story is a really remarkable case study in how a story gets created which has no substance to it, not merely because of the war propaganda of the Bush administration, but because certain, shall we say, overzealous members of the U.S. press corps are overeager to advance certain storylines that the administration favors. In this case, the storyline is that Iran is killing Americans in Iraq, and specifically, you know, the guilty party, the main guilty party, is Michael Gordon of the New York Times. Now, I think many of your listeners will be aware of the fact that Gordon, along with Judith Miller, was the creator or the transmission belt, shall we say, of the Bush administration's key war propaganda theme in September 2002 of the infamous Iraqi aluminum tubes, which were said to be evidence of the Saddam Hussein regime's preparation for nuclear weapons.
Well, that's right. And now let me stop you there. It was Michael R. Gordon and Judith Miller who they wrote an article for the Sunday New York Times in September 2002. And then that Sunday, that very day that it was published and hit print, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, and I forget, maybe General Franks, all went on Sunday morning news shows to say, see, here it is, even in the New York Times.
That's exactly right. I mean, this was an absolutely crucial chess move, if you will, in the Karl Rove-inspired, Karl Rove-Dick Cheney-inspired strategy of preparing the American people for war.
And now this is the very same Michael R. Gordon is,
that's right.
is the and conduit
so Gordon
for this
played
information
an
again.
Absolutely crucial role in that move, lending the credibility, such as it was, of the New York Times. To that storyline. More recently, of course, he was instrumental in advancing the Bush administration's line about the you know the irrefutable evidence that it was Iranian government sources who were responsible for the appearance of the explosively formed devices in Iraq. Now, and I'll come back to that, but I want to focus on this story that the Times published immediately after the press briefing by this Brigadier General Kevin Bergner, the spokesman of the U.S. military command in Baghdad, because I have now obtained a copy of the transcript of that briefing. And what one discovers upon reading that transcript is that the U.S. A military command briefer, Brigadier General Bergner, never said directly that Iran was behind the planning or involved in the planning of this January raid on Karbala, which killed 5 American soldiers. What he did was to put forward very cleverly conceived ambiguous language which avoided stating directly that that was an Iranian that there was an Iranian involvement in the planning of that, and I will read you exactly what Bergner stated from his in his briefing. He said that a Hezbollah operative who was captured in southern Iraq, as well, and he was a liaison with this militia group that carried out the attack. And the Iraqi who was said to be in charge of that militia group who did carry out the attack, both of whom were captured on March 22nd, and these are the words of Kevin Bergner, they state that senior leadership within the Quds Force, that's the Iranian Revolutionary Guards organization, knew of and supported planning for the eventual Karbala attack, unquote. Now, this is very indirect language. They knew of and supported the planning. That's very far from stating that they were actually participating in the planning or helped to plan the attack. And Bergner was using this language very carefully and in a very considered manner. He said that knowing that he did not have evidence of Iranian direct involvement in the planning.
And knowing that Michael Gordon would take it and run with it.
Well, not only did he take it and run with it, this is the detail which one discovers from reading the transcript of that, which really gives away the source of this story, the origin of this story. What happened was that because Bergner did not state directly that the Iranians were behind this attack or involved directly in the attack, in planning it, basically Gordon stepped in and offered to volunteer to clarify the story. And here's what Gordon said, according to the transcript. Quote, "What's new here, as I understand it, is that you're asserting the Quds force and the Iranians had specific knowledge of this attack in advance and helped guide and support it, not merely train the force." In other words, he was prodding Bergner to say that that the Iranians were directly involved in the planning. So then Bergner refused to respond to that statement by Gordon. He refused to respond to the statement by Gordon, and instead he answered a different question, whether the purpose of it was to capture American soldiers in the hope of trading them for detained Iraqi officials, as had been suggested by Gordon. So Gordon then tried a second time to get him to state that it was the story of Iranian help and guidance for the January attack. He said the specific motivations behind these operations he said that you're asserting essentially the Quds force directed and helped plan this attack in Karbala. That was Gordon stating that, not Bergner.
Uh-huh.
So Bergner then responded, "That is what we learned from," and then he named the person who had been one of the people captured and interrogated. But he never stated it directly, and by insisting on indirect language, Bergner was staying out of the not taking responsibility for that charge. Mm-hmm. Essentially, this is a story that was written by Michael Gordon himself.
Mm-hmm. So what a case study in the stovepipe. There you go. You have this guy, General Bergner, who actually just finished working in the White House, who then goes to Iraq and gives this big press conference in front of Michael R. Gordon, and then Michael R. Gordon prints it up on the front page of the New York Times, making all kinds of wild accusations. And then Joe Lieberman picks it up from the New York Times. And the next thing you know, you have a vote of 97-0 in the United States Senate saying that Iran is killing our troops and we're not happy about it.
That
which
is
of course
the
means that if Dick Cheney starts bombing them next week, he can say, see, even Hillary Clinton and everybody else said that they're already at war against us. We're going to continue this conversation with Gareth Porter. Right after this break, you're listening to the Charles Goyette Show on 1100 KFNX in Phoenix, Arizona. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Charles Goyette Show. I'm Scott Horton, having a great time filling in. Scott Horton from antiwar.com, that is. Don't forget to say that, Scott. I'm having a great time filling in for Charles Goyette, the most independent talk show host in America, who I hope is sleeping in this morning and enjoying his vacation. I'm on the phone with Gareth Porter. He's one of my favorite investigative reporters. He's also a historian who's written a gigantic armful of books. He writes news for IPS News Service and for the American Prospect, among others. And I want to go ahead and take this phone call from Paul in Scottsdale. Real quick, though, Paul, because I got a ton of truth I need to wring out of this guy before the top of the hour. Go ahead.
That's what my phone call is all about.
All right.
You guys are a breath of fresh air, and Charles is in danger of losing his title as America's most important or independent talk show host.
Oh, come on.
You guys are terrific. Listen, all of these guys you were mentioning, Bergner, Miller, Gordon, Lieberman, isn't it true they're all of the Israeli persuasion?
Gareth Porter, what do you say?
I have no idea about Kevin Bergner. I actually don't know. I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with the backgrounds of these people. I don't know that it matters that much because this is not really simply a matter of, for those people who are pro-war with Iran. Obviously Israeli interests are one of the issues behind this, no question about that. But let's face it, there are other interests that are supporting war with Iran as well. I mean, this is a This is a much broader problem than simply Israeli interests, although, you know, I certainly would not disagree that that's a very important element.
Yeah, and I think when you look at people like Michael Gordon, you know, he seems to me, from any of his reporting on no matter which subject, he just, you know, wants to be famous and doesn't care how much truth makes it into his news stories as long as it gets to the front page, seems to be what matters to him most.
Well, I think, you know, Gordon obviously is an ambitious reporter, and I think you're right about that, Scott, but at the same time, I mean, he clearly has an ideological agenda as well. I mean, he's leaning over backwards or leaning forwards, as the case may be, for, you know, to find evidence that would justify aggressive military action. I think that's part of his background.
Right. Okay. Now, we got the caller stacking up here, Gareth, but before we get to him, I need to ask you specifically about the explosively formed penetrators.
Yes.
And I'm going to go ahead and do my little bit of debunking before I pass it off to you. The war party, the bureaucrats, and the people in the media just use this refrain that these new and improved explosively formed penetrators, which are better landmines than the average IED in Iraq, must be coming from Iran. And now I have a major assertion to make along those lines, which is that Reuters and the Christian Science Monitor both reported on April 10th of this year, 2007, that Lieutenant Colonel Scott Blackwell, during an operation called Black Eagle in Diwania province, found a factory that makes these explosively formed penetrators about 100 miles south of Baghdad. And so, well, there you go. They must not be coming from Iran because here they are being made in Iraq, according to Lieutenant Colonel Scott Blackwell in Reuters and the Christian Science Monitor. Slight parentheses, the Washington Post censored that part of the story from their version of the Reuters reprint there. But tell me what you know, Gareth Porter, investigative reporter.
Well, right, and you know, the point that you're making clearly contradicts one of the key points that Michael Gordon, among others, in his reporting, emphasized repeatedly, that the U.S. command, U.S. officials in Baghdad, say that they have no evidence that these particular IEDs have been manufactured or made in Iraq, and that clearly is not the case. And, you know, my own source for this was a private security contractor who had been working, doing research on this question of IEDs in Iraq for a couple of years, and said, well, you know, he simply couldn't understand why the U.S. officials were saying that they couldn't find evidence of this, because he thought it was quite clear that there was evidence that they were being manufactured in Iraq. But let me just very quickly take a broader angle on this problem, because I think we don't want to just view it from the very narrow evidence point of view. The larger point that needs to be made, and which is constantly missing from, you know, news coverage of this question, is that what's really going on here is that Shiite militias have the opportunity to obtain these on the black market, and the motivation to obtain them. And, you know, what they're really getting from Iran, and this has been shown, this has been well documented, is that they have been getting financing from Iran ever since the appearance of the Shiite militias in Iraq in 2003, when the United States invaded and created the opportunity for the Shiites to come back from Iran. They have been getting Iranian money. Everyone has known it. It's been basically accepted from the very beginning. They're using that money to help buy the weapons that they need. It's very simple, very straightforward, and there's no conspiracy involved in it.
Mm-hmm. As we just discussed with Robert Dreyfus, Iran backs the same factions in Iraq that we're backing. The IEDs that are killing our guys are being set off by the Sunni insurgency, right?
Well, most of them have been, exactly. And you know, I would simply make the point that when Shiites do, I mean, the Shiites are also resisting U.S. troops, no question about it. But that's not an Iranian policy, that's the Shiite policy.
All right, everybody, Gareth Porter. We'll be right back.